Sports Radio.
Starting our third hour, man, I feel so good. I feel great. I'm having an awesome rally. Welcome to the jungle. I'm Jim Rome. We're coming to you live from Southern California in the Quicken Loan Studios. Quicken Loans apply simply, understand fully, and mortgage confidently. Very busy third hour. Telephone number is 1-800-636-8686. We've got a lot to get done between now and the end of the program. Remember, I'm not in tomorrow nor Monday, so now is the time to call or hit me up on Twitter or shoot me an email. I want to start this hour by talking some Oakland A's baseball. We are joined by the manager of the A's. He is in his eighth season with the A's. He is an American League Manager of the Year, a National League Manager of the Year, one of six managers in history to win Manager of the Year in both leagues. Oakland is 25-24 this year. They're at home today against Seattle. That game's coming up at 3:35 p.m. Eastern, so I better get to it. Bob Melvin is my guest. Bob, it's great to have you back. Thanks for doing it. How are you?
I'm good, Jim. How are you?
Good, good. Skip, you dropped a tough game last night to the Mariners, 1-0. I know you're not thrilled with the result, but let me ask you about Daniel Gossett. He went seven innings. He allowed four hits and an unearned run. That was his first start since coming back from Nashville. So starting right there, what did you make of what you saw from him last night?
Oh, I thought he was great. I mean, it's as good as we've seen him here, actually. You know, he's put together quite a season so far in AAA, and, you know, we were down two starters coming out of spring. We lost two starters on the last road trip, so we really needed him to come up and perform. He did exactly that. We just couldn't get the bats going the last couple games.
Right, so what about that? The offense has scuffled a little bit of late. He had to place Chris Davis on the DL. He's got a groin strain. I mean, it's a long season. Stretches like that obviously are going to happen. So what's the key to getting through stretches like that and getting out of them?
Well, you know, obviously it hurts. I mean, he's like having a human sledgehammer in the middle of the lineup, and everybody kind of rallies around him. He takes the pressure off a lot of guys. But, you know, one, it gives an opportunity for somebody else. It allows us to move the DH spot around a little bit for some guys that maybe haven't gotten a lot of rest to this point. But the other flip side is we'd rather have him back in the lineup. So, you know, we just have to do it as a group, not put too much pressure on each guy. And know that he's going to be back. It's a grade one strain, so know that he's going to be back probably in 10 to 12 days and hold down the fort in the meantime.
A's manager Bob Melvin joins us. Now, when you and I spoke back in spring training, you had a pretty good feeling about this team. You're 50 games in, or nearly 50 games in. So what do you make of how the group has shown up so far, and has it been what you expected?
You know, it really kind of has. You know, it's with our payroll, it's tough to withstand injuries. So we've had some injuries that have affected us, but you know, we felt like that this year we were going to trend in the right direction. You know, we just came off an East Coast trip where we went 7-3, and everybody was talking about this might be the undoing of us. So we felt good. We swung the bats really well. We came back home. We haven't swung the bats very well in the first two games here. So we've been up and down a little bit as it's going to be over the course of the season. But I think coming out of spring, if someone told us we were over 500 at this point, we'd probably take that because we feel like we have the ability to get better as the season goes along.
The thing is, though, not just a 7-3 road trip, but a 7-3 road trip where you had a four-game sweep of the Blue Jays and a road trip which included stops in New York, Boston, and Toronto. I mean, a road trip like that can be a real grind. 10 games, 10 days, and you went 7-3. So what did you guys show you about how they handled their business against some of the best in the league?
No doubt about it. I mean, it's once you go to the East Coast, you know you're gonna have your starters are gonna be taxed, your bullpen's gonna be taxed, and you're gonna have to score some runs. And we did exactly that. We lost two starters on the trip in two consecutive games, and had to cover 14 2/3 innings out of the bullpen 2 days in a row. A total of 14 2/3. So we got contributions from guys across the board in the bullpen. We swung the bats well. That's what we feel like is going to be our strength. But going into that trip, boy, you know, you look at it and say 5-5, it'd be a decent trip to come out of it 7-3 was terrific.
A's manager Bob Melvin joins us. Now, the team also acquired Stephen Piscotty in a trade that was motivated by his desire to be close to his mother, Gretchen. After she was diagnosed with ALS, she passed away earlier this month. So as a manager and as a team, what's this experience been like? And then how do you go about trying to support him as he deals with that grief?
Yeah, that's a good question. I mean, and you know, usually these things, you know, have a little shorter shelf life. This has been going on with him for quite a while, well over a year, and it's, you could tell it really wore on him. You know, you try to insulate as far as he goes within your team. These guys give him a lot of support and love. It's a really close group, and I think he feels it. You know, we gave him the option when he came back. He flew into Boston. He left early in the morning. We gave him the option. He wanted to play. He hits a home run his first at bat. It was like a bomb went off in the dugout. The guys were so excited for him. So, you know, it's just now trying to get back into the routine. He's still a young kid. He's a heck of a player. But, boy, we've had some heavy hearts here for quite a while for him.
Yeah, I mean, going back to that point, what a moment that must have been. Like he had a few games off in the week that she passed away, and then in that very first game back, he homered in his first at-bat. What was the moment like for the entire team when he did that?
Oh, it was amazing. Like I said, it felt like a walk-off in the dugout, and guys were, you know, we're just so happy to see him once he got there. He got up really early in the morning to make the flight and try to play in the game and did a home run the first time. Shows he's got a little flair for the dramatic, but the guys were just so excited, and now we have him back full time, and you know, we feel like he's going to get better as the year goes along too.
You know, Bob, I've talked with managers of late, in fact, the last couple of years, and the one thing that keeps coming up over and over again is a focus on having open and honest relationships with the players and how critical that is, especially over the course of a long, long season. So the question is, I mean, everybody knows it, but how do you go about developing those types of relationships?
Well, you know, it's just kind of gotten to that point now where you know, you even rely on guys for input. You know, there's certain few guys on this team that I'll ask, you know, from time to time, bring them in and talk to them, and not only about their personal lives, but, you know, what they think's going on. How can we get better? So you use these guys to kind of get a feel for the pulse of the team and how things are going. And it's just the way it was when I first came up, and, you know, I went to the Tigers in 1985. I was scared to even go talk to Sparky Anderson, who was our manager, let alone go have a conversation with him. So it really is different now. The younger players are getting to the big leagues even younger now. So you want to make sure what you know what makes them tick, and not only have a professional relationship, but with a personal relationship with them, because they feel like you're really invested in them if you do.
Hey, Bob, it's really great that you brought up Sparky Anderson like that, because even when I first got in the business and I was like a young guy on TV, I would have him in studio, and man, he was amazing. I mean, he was so charismatic and so gregarious, but most of all, approachable even to a media guy on the way up back in the day. I don't even know how to explain it. It was an amazing thing to see. What was Sparky like to play for?
He was great. I mean, I was just there for a short period of time. I really had better actual relationship with him when I was in the minor leagues. He used to come over to minor league camp. I was a guy in the Tiger system that was supposed to be an upcoming prospect, and man, he really made me feel good. Once you get to the big leagues, it's a little different, at least to start. But he really impacted my career before I even got to the big leagues, based on the fact that I felt like he knew who I was, and I felt like he was kind of invested in me.
Can you imagine what he must have dealt with in running that Reds clubhouse back in the day, the big red machine, the strong personalities and the guys, the Hall of Famers, and how strong they were. And then you look at your career. You wear number 6 right now, and the story goes that it's a tribute to Sal Bando, who taught you a lot when he was GM of the Brewers. What kind of things did you learn from him, and what did you respect the most about his approach?
Well, I followed him as a kid here growing up in the Bay Area, and he was the captain of those Oakland A's teams that won the World Series, and he just kind of had that leadership aura about him. And then when he gave me my first opportunity as a non-player in the Milwaukee system, he showed me the entire gamut of how our organization was run. I was in player development. I was a bench coach with Phil Garner on the team. I was a special assistant to him. I did some minor league scouting stuff. He really moved me along quickly and let me know what everybody in an organization had to deal with. So, you know, you can see things from somebody else's shoes when you've been in all different facets of the organization. I thank him for that. He's a great man.
Bob, Phil Garner's another one. Scrap iron. God, he was so hard-nosed. How tough and hard-nosed a player was he?
He was. You know, I got to spend some time with him with the Giants in his last year. And, you know, formed a quick bond. I was a younger guy. He kind of took me under his wing some. And then, you know, when I got out of playing, I was with him, you know, in Milwaukee. I was with him in Detroit. And I take all my managerial chops. I mean, he's my guy. He's who I learned from. You know, when you have the protege mentor type thing, he is my guy. So we still communicate quite a bit. I always see him when we go to Houston. We had him here for a while in Oakland as kind of a special assistant to me. Just terrific people. Without Sal Bano and Phil Garner, there's no chance that I'm here where I am right now.
I'm glad to hear you say that. I haven't talked to him in a few years, they pay me not to play favorites. I love Phil Garner, one of my favorite guys. He was so great. Before you go, you're playing the Mariners today, and earlier this month it was announced that Ichiro was going to be taking a step back. You managed him early in his time with Seattle during that amazing 2004 season where he broke the single season hits record. What do you remember about that year?
Well, I know he got off to a tough start in April, and from May forward, it seems like he got three hits every night. How he prepares is unlike any player I've ever had. We're still really close. I had dinner over at his house when we were in Seattle last time and let me know kind of what was going on with him going forward here. But really and truly, all you had to let him know is what time the game was. He is, from the time he wakes up during the day to the time he goes to sleep, and when he gets up the next day, it's all about preparation to play a Major League Baseball game. And when you have somebody like him in his clubhouse, not only for the younger guys, but the veteran guys to see how he prepares, man, it really is special.
Yeah, Bob, the fact that he has dinner with you, he breaks bread with you, and when you consider how private he is, I got to ask, what are those dinners like? What do you guys talk about? What do you guys eat? What's an evening with Ichiro like?
You know, is that we go to dinner quite often during the course of the season, no matter where he is. But we went over to his house that day in Seattle, and you know, it really is easy to talk to him. His interpreter Alan's there, but we could have a conversation without an interpreter. He's that smart. But it's not all baseball. You know, we have some history. We, you know, kind of go over, you know, where he's lived and what his life experiences are. He's very inquisitive. My daughter was there with me, and he was very inquisitive to our relationship. Just a special guy and easy to talk to, and you know, the relationship has gotten better and better over the years.
He is one of just six managers in history to win Manager of the Year in both leagues. Seattle is at Oakland today. It's a 3:35 game, so I better let him go. Bob, great to have you on the show. Thank you so much, and I always look forward to the conversation.
My pleasure. Me as well.
Bob Melvin, manager of the A's. Eighth season there. My thanks to him. All right, when we come back, change up on you. Chad Millman is going to join me. And he is in charge of all media for the Action Network. If you like gambling, you're going to want to hear this. Gambling soon to be legal where you live, perhaps. We'll talk about what that means. Chad Millman joins me in about 5 minutes. Don't go anywhere. 2018, flying right on by. You want to make sure that you elevate your game. You want to make sure that this is the best year you've ever had. Well, if you're a contractor or a builder or a remodeler, you really can. Because elevating your game for the rest of the year got a whole lot easier thanks to my pals at Lumber Liquidators. Why do I say that? I'm talking about their LL Pro Plus program. LL Pro Plus is Lumber Liquidators' new pro services team that you can call on for all your professional flooring needs. LL Pro Plus will help you crush it with professional pricing and dedicated support, and you'll get exactly what you need when you need it. That way you get all your projects done on time, which is extremely important, obviously. And on top of that, LL Pro Plus gives you the ultimate value and quality. And with LL Pro Plus, no job is too large, no job is too small. So put the flooring experts on your team right now. Visit your local Lumber Liquidator store or go to LumberLiquidators.com. LumberLiquidators.com. Continue to make 2018 the best year ever and do it with Lumber Liquidators.
You're listening to the Jim Rome Show.
Make the right game plan for you. Farmers Insurance has practical insurance knowledge gained from more than 89 years of experience. Find an agent at farmers.com. 1-800-636-8686. We've got time for telephone calls on the other side of this. Do not go anywhere. First up, though, we are joined by the head of media for the Action Network. He is also a best-selling author. My guest is Chad Millman. Chad, it's great to have you on the program. How are you?
I'm good. Good to be with you. This is awesome.
Chad, this is awesome. Great to have you on. I've been looking forward to talking to you. Let me first ask you, what was your reaction when you heard the news of the Supreme Court's decision regarding sports gambling? What was the first thing that went through your mind?
Oh, my God, I can't believe this happened. That was exactly it. Not because the Supreme Court ruled that I had a feeling when they decided to take the case a year ago in the summer, that they had something to say, that they would like to think that I was thinking that they probably wanted to figure out a way to overturn some component of the federal betting ban. But I think what was shocking, and this is what was shocking to everybody who's been handicapping this case, for lack of a better term, was that they overturned the entire federal betting ban, which that was really unexpected. It sort of opened the floodgates on what's possible in this space from a content perspective, from a business perspective, for bookmakers, from a state perspective, for revenue generation. It turned it into a much bigger business.
These are all relevant points, all pertinent questions. But let me ask you this. I mean, there's the option that there could be federal regulation of sports gambling. How likely is that, or do you think that Congress is just going to leave it up to the states?
I think that Congress will eventually enact federal legislation. And the reason is twofold. One, they are going to get lobbied so hard. It is only a massive business if the biggest players in the market have the opportunity to capitalize on it. And we're talking about places like William Hill, which is a huge bookmaker overseas that for the past 10 years has been buying sports books all over Nevada, as well as getting ready to buy to implement sports books in New Jersey and Delaware. Places like Paddy Power, which just made a deal to buy the draft daily fantasy site FanDuel to get a foothold into that market and use their customers to convert them into sports bettors. Plus the leagues, they can only make a ton of money if it's nationally, if it's federally regulated. And the media companies, they stand to benefit because the larger entities that I just mentioned in the bookmaking space, they're the ones who are going to go and spend hundreds of millions of dollars a year on advertising to reach customers. And it's harder to do all of that if you have to geo-target. If you're running ads on Monday Night Football and you got to figure out, all right, I want to get bettors in New York, but I can't get bettors in New Jersey. I can't get people in New Jersey because it's not legal there. It just makes it a lot more complicated and dirtier from a business perspective.
Chad Millman joining us. All right, Chad, so if we look at how big this business can be, as an example, how much money are we talking about in legalized sports gambling right now, and then how much do you expect that to grow as a result of this decision?
Well, I think if you're talking about it from two places. One, the handle on legalized sports betting, I mean, the total number of bets made legally in the United States is really only in the state of Nevada, and that's in the $4.5 billion range. I forget exactly what the handle is, but it's $4 to $5 billion last year was bet. Not a huge amount when you compare it to, say, the 170 to as much as $400 billion market that everyone estimates this is when you think about the illegal bets made. So you transition that, obviously, with right now, the only state that's really ready to go after this, other than Nevada, is New Jersey, and then you have Delaware, and I think very soon, probably by football season, if they can get it right, you've got New York. Clearly, it's not going to go from $5 billion legal market to $170 billion legal market with adding those three states, but what you are going to get is an increased activity around the marketing, and just overseas, think about what's happening in Australia and what's happening in England. Those places, the influx of cash from the larger businesses, from the bookmakers and everyone else who's trying to reach customers is a multi-billion dollar. We're talking, you know, high $1 billion market, $9 billion, $10 billion market. In the United States, imagine how much bigger that's going to be.
Chad Millman joining us. Chad, before I ask you how you ended up where you are right now, let me ask you this. Given the numbers you just laid out, how much will the expansion of legalized gambling impact the way people watch and engage with games?
I think it's massive, Jim. I mean, you think about the number of people, there was a study, the number of games people watch, the number of NFL games people watch when they don't bet on sports in a standard season is 15. An average number of games people watch when they do bet on sports is more than 40. The time that people engage with sports when they bet on those games is 40% higher than it is with people who don't bet on sports. So what you're going to be getting is just an audience that is significantly happier to be watching these games. They're going to be watching them for longer. They're going to want to watch more of them. It's going to change the way people are covering these games because they want to capture that audience. I mean, honestly, look at fantasy. fantasy has become such a huge driver of people's attention on a Sunday afternoon that all the networks are building programming specifically around engaging that fantasy fan.
We're talking to Chad Millman. So, Chad, then, in terms of your personal story, the road to becoming the head of media for the Action Network to me is fascinating. How did you first get interested and then start gaining knowledge about sports gambling?
So I was at ESPN forever. I was at ESPN for the better part of 20 years, from 98 until 2017. And the only time I wasn't at ESPN was in 1999. I was an editor at the magazine, and I wrote a story for the magazine about the guys who set the point spreads for the NCAA tournament. It was a bunch of bookmakers at the Stardust Hotel on the Strip in Las Vegas, and this was before the Internet had become sort of the predominant mover of lines and maker of lines. So anything that happened in sports betting happened first at the Stardust. And it was a multi-billion dollar industry that was being sort of predicated and built on the point spreads these bookmakers were making. And so I talked to them for the NCAA tournament, thought it was fantastic, and then asked them if I could write a book about them and sort of their interplay with professional gamblers over the course of the college basketball season. And that book was called The Odds. And I spent the 99-2000 season in Vegas sort of tracking one professional bettor who was considered the best college basketball handicapper in the world at the time, and the bookmakers, and seeing how sort of lines moved and sort of the small details that impacted this huge, huge, what I call the parallel conversation that we're all having about sports. I did that and then just sort of went back to the magazine and became an editor. But along the way, I was writing a column about sports betting for ESPN.com. And then I started a podcast about sports betting for ESPN Audio and was doing television. And so it all sort of morphed into something bigger. And then I had, you know, I was editor-in-chief of the magazine and editorial director of ESPN Digital, and made gambling a central part of our coverage. And so when the folks who started the Action Network were looking for someone to help build their content space, they called me. And to be honest, like, this was, you know, last summer, fall, and you could see the landscape changing pretty aggressively. And while I was very happy at ESPN, and it's a great life, I felt like if I was ever going to, you know, make a bet, it was going to be in this space with the people who started the Action Network, and that was the Churning Group.
Chad Millman's my guest. So you made a big bet. Chad, help me with this now, and you can set me straight. Tell me if this is a breach in etiquette or a breach in protocol, but if we're talking about making bets, right, what's the biggest bet you ever laid? Now, you might say, well, this, I gave up an amazing job at ESPN, but aside from that, the biggest actual bet you've ever made, what was it?
It was, I can tell you exactly what it was, because I've never tried to hide this. I am not a massive bettor. Like, to me, what I love about this area is, like, the language is really interesting and visceral and emotional. I love the characters. I love the parallel conversation. I think it's really influential. I love the math and the psychology. But the biggest bet I ever made, $300. And it was on, it was actually when I was reporting the book and I was doing the odds in Vegas. And I had bet on Utah State to cover against Connecticut. They were 9-point dogs in the NCAA tournament. And they were covering the whole game. And in the last 2 minutes, all the scrubs came in. UConn was winning by like 8 or 10 points. And the scrubs came in, and UConn made a bucket. And they were up by 11 with about 3 or 4 seconds left. And then Rick Mahorn's nephew, I think, was on Utah State. He came in off the bench, and he launched a three-pointer from about between half court and the three-point line, and it went in. And so they covered. The spread was 9. They lost by 8. I won that $300 bet, and I was so happy. And then I looked over to my right, and the guy I wrote this book about picked up the phone and put $100,000 back in play, because that's how much you just won on that shot.
Wow.
And that put everything I was doing in perspective.
That's insane. All right, so when you talk to these people and you wrote that book, what's the more intense feeling, the big win or the bad beat?
Oh, the bad beat. I mean, the bad beat is just, it wrecks people, because they think about all the things that went wrong. They think about the call. They think about the shot. They think about the missed tackle. I mean, and look, we do something on actionnetwork.com where we're writing about the bad beats every single day because it's like a traffic accident. And, you know, people can't stop but watch and see what happened. And you don't write about the big wins because the flip side of those is somebody won a game like that, but it's not as exciting. And it's like a bad golf game, right? Like, bettors love to wallow in sort of their own misery, and they love to share these stories in a way that is really emotional. And so when you write about a bad beat, it gets tons and tons of traction, and that's how bettors sort of view the world.
It's almost like it hurts so much, it almost feels good. It doesn't feel good, but having owned horse races, I've been on the wrong end of some bad beats, and it feels so horrible that it's kind of like when that feeling's not there, you kind of miss it. Let me finally ask you this. For the Action Network, how much of the content that you provide your subscribers is like straight data, straight intel, and then how much of it is entertainment-based? In other words, you know you're going to get the people who love gambling. Does it appeal to a casual player as well?
Yes. It's probably about 40%, here's hardcore stuff that you want to subscribe for that is driven by our data and our tools and our analytics and our analysis that says, here's who you want to play tonight and why. Or these are the reasons why we think you should bet on this series or you shouldn't bet or which direction you should go. But the stories that we're finding, like, that really resonate with people and that capture the biggest audience, it's like, Jason Sobel, who's one of our writers, who's probably the premier golf writer in the country and was at ESPN for 20 years, he wrote a phenomenal story about the night he lost a bet to Phil Mickelson on a boxing match, and that Mickelson had set up this huge party for everybody to come watch this fight and casually dropped, hey, if anybody wants to bet on this fight with me, I'm taking action. And like half the room did it. Clearly they were all suckered by Mickelson because he knew what was going to – he had studied that fight. He had handicapped that fight, and nobody else had done it. Like, another story that tracked really well for us was Paul LaDuca, who was a major league catcher for 10 years. And you know from sort of the horse business, like, he's a massive follower of the horses and has been for years. And so he was an four-time All-Star, but he wrote a story for us about winning $80,000 on the Kentucky Derby and watching the race from the clubhouse when he was playing for the Marlins and getting called out to the field by a clubby, by a clubhouse kid, because the umpire was waiting for him to come to the plate to take his at-bat, but he was watching the race to see if he was going to win $80,000. And he won the race, won $80,000, raced up to the home plate, was out of breath, told the catcher, just throw me a fastball. I'm going to slap this to short. We're going to get out of this inning because I just won $80,000. And that's exactly what happened. And so, you know, we very much try to traffic in the stories that we know are going to resonate with the widest audience possible because, I mean, as you know, people just want to hear good stories, and people are fascinated by stories that involve money and risk. And those are always going to be winners, and you don't need to be a bettor in order to really enjoy reading or hearing about those things.
That's so true, Chad. These are great stories. And the thing is, they're great stories that ordinarily might not be told, but now that the thing is changing and the way we look at it is changing, it's not so taboo, people are going to want to hear these things and have a great thirst for these things. And a good place to get it is the Action Network. He is the head of media for the Action Network and a best-selling author. Chad, it is great to have you in the jungle. Really nice to talk to you again. Let's make sure we do it again soon. I loved it.
I love it, Jim. Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Take care, Chad. Have a great weekend. Chad Millman. Those are great, great stories. Great stories. Hey, listen, I'll be honest. You know, when I said to him, what's the biggest bet you ever laid? The biggest bet, and because these are things that you do not talk about. You don't want to talk about money. You don't want to talk about how much money you made. You don't want to talk about how much money you lost. These are kind of taboo things. But the biggest bet that I ever made, and like him, I'm not a guy who gambles a lot. If I'm in Vegas, I'll sit down, I'll play blackjack. But you do ask me this. I get this a lot of times. Rome, do you bet your horses? And the answer is, I bet the horses. Remember back in the day when everybody had Pete Rose's back, and everybody who had Pete Rose's back would say, he didn't do anything wrong. He didn't do anything wrong. Well, he bet on baseball as a manager. Yes, but he never bet his team to lose. Well, the counter to that was, he bet his team to win. But on days that he didn't bet them, that was a bet against. A non-bet was a bet against. That was a bet that he thought they were not going to win, or he would have laid action that day. Same thing with my horses. I hate to say it. Well, we made the big bet when we bought the horse. But I got to be honest. If I don't feel good about the race, I'm obviously not going to bet the race. So I feel the same way. So my biggest bet ever, we bet misdirection. I bet misdirection the day she won her first Breeders' Cup. So you can imagine, I bet her across the board. I bet her to win. I bet her to place. I bet her to show. When she hit the morning line, she was 20-1. Long shot. Would have made me a hell of a lot of money. Hell of a lot of money. I mean, clones. Lots and lots of money. The problem is the wise guys, the guys who knew, the guys who were smart, the guys who followed that, knew that she should not have been 20-1. And they started loading up on her. And then you clones who got caught up in how excited maybe I was to be in a Breeders' Cup race, started to hit her hard too. By the time she got in the gate, she was down to 6-1. 6-1. She went off 6-1. I bet her across the board. And again, we probably shouldn't do this, but if we're going to have a gambling conversation, if we're going to have a gambling conversation, I will tell you, I bet her 1,000 across the board. 1,000 to win, 1,000 to place, 1,000 to show. It's 6-1. I walked out of there with 25 grand in cash. They make you sign for it. I think if I'm not mistaken, I might have been given a little bit of a support walking out of there. I walked out of there with 25 grand in hundreds.
Great cash.
Coming out of my pockets. Best day of my life. But that was at 6-1. She went off at 6-1. She was the morning line of 20-1. So again, understand that I was more happy that our horse won a Breeders' Cup. And if you don't believe me, that was an amazing win, but you get the purse money too. Albie, take it easy. I'm in trouble. I got to go. Anyway, as long as we're sharing stories, that was my biggest bet. We're coming right back. Time now for a sports update. Here it is. Good reaction to Chad Millman, and especially about the question, what's the biggest bet you ever made? What's the biggest bet you ever made? Did you win or did you lose? What did it feel like to win that bet? What did it feel like to lose that bet? At SoCal Jeff tweets, whoa, 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 whoa. A story about hefty gambling? I don't believe it. Not only a story about him gambling, but him betting on a fight and sandbagging his whole party.
Hefty.
At Toby Toro tweets, 20,000. Hashtag highest bet. 20,000. My man, hope you won that. Radom 27 tweets, when in Vegas, I normally play the roulette table on James Kelly's forehead. 19 black. 19 black. Come on, black. Red. It's going to take a minute or 5 hours to come around. Anybody else? Dear Jim, I've heard rumors that they're running out of space on Lord Stanley's Cup, so the NHL is looking for an alternative. So if the Caps win, based on your original prediction, have you considered putting the Washington players' names on James Kelly's enormous flight deck? Stan in Anchorage. War the yeoman's work performed by Samara. Samara's getting a lot of credit today. And well, she should.
Laugh out loud.
She's got to start early in the morning to finish up that guy's face. Well, his head, anyway. Romy, loving the early Friday show. Glad to see James Kelly back in with the XR4 Ti. My television feed keeps cutting out and getting interrupted, though. I was wondering if you could ask Kelly to move a little to the left, as he might be affecting the signal. Thanks, Rome. You're the best. Jeremy and Scotty. Warren Kelly teaching his kids tennis. What, you mean on his head? To run that net right down the middle of it? Hell, they could play doubles. Time now for the week that was. But in this case, the 4 days that were, Alvy.
Live in Southern California and also live from the Quicken Loan Studios. What's going on? Welcome to the program. Hope you had a great weekend. My name is Jim Rome. Lots to get to on this Monday. Starting with the NBA. Quote, this is my flipping house.
Yeah! Man's game.
Golden State has lost only 4 playoff games since Kevin Durant arrived. 4 playoff games in the last 2 years, and now Houston needs them to lose 3 in a week. Steph back, series over. Howard Beck.
And whoever's coming out of the East is just going to get smoked. We can assume that.
The Vegas Golden Knights again create history.
And now we're just 4 wins away from a parade down the strip.
And with Wayne Newton himself turning that crank to fire up the home folks, I don't see how it doesn't happen.
Eddie Olchek.
No disrespect to the Loyola Ramblers men's basketball team and Sister Jean.
No disrespect.
But I think the Vegas Golden Knights are the story of the century.
He'll call you back. He'll call you back.
John,
go to work.
Get your ass to work.
Get your ass to Moss.
I'm tired of American crap getting sent up here to get polished up like Johnny Manziel. Keep your drug-addled trash down south.
Mark Livingston behind the back. Sheds Harden for a 2. Sean Livingston.
What we have here is special. So we talked to the rookies like, look, it's not going to be like this everywhere you go.
It looks like the fun shot of the aircraft carrier Reagan.
All right, so you tell me then that the Intrepid's too small.
We're in a jet wash.
The Intrepid's an old carriage, and that's old from the 70s area. I'm talking more like the Reagan.
But he's an idiot.
But then he left the show, and his career was murdered. Speaking of famous people,
Jason, lock and forward.
OTAs don't matter.
Oh, this guy had a great day of practice. He caught 12 balls today in shorts and shell in May against air.
Oh, dear. We might have the wrong car calling. Black sedan. There's a million of them out there. And
now, in Colleen's defense, they were only going off the live shot that they had from the chopper. So the pilot and the cameraman in the Air 7 can wear that one.
We apologize for
Lewis
that.
Lung,
well, don't worry. Young Gun is here. This Young Gun is repping, and this Young Gun has been ignited. Ignited, Jim.
Young Gun got run. Brandi Chastain deserves it, not because you jackals deserve it. And
it's
before you throw away that heinous bust, I might be one to take that off your hands.
I need some desk art.
Kevin Harvick.
I love Target.
Your list of demands. Clones, listen, if not for me, do it for you. For
you.
The greatest flex job ever. And we all go in together.
Hey, Meta World Peace, baby.
They broke a piece of leg from a table, and they threw it. It went right
through
his heart.
Is that an urban legend, or did that really go down like that?
This happened in 93, and we got the word that he passed away. They had a big fight, and then we found out what really happened. It was really crazy. Sometimes it wasn't safe to put that.
As the Rockets come to Oracle Arena here,
the world got the series that it's been waiting on all year long. Very un-Warrior-like not to finish. They had a 10-point lead in the fourth quarter, a chance to go up 3-1, and to drive a dagger right through their heart. Mark Stein is back in the jungle.
You know, I'd like to think I'm a little smarter, a little more cautious, a little faster, but I don't know. I'm still the same jittery, panicky warrior I always was.
This guy looked in the toilet and saw an orange worm with a head and segments. In fact, after hearing that story, good luck getting me to eat fish ever again. Good luck getting me to eat ever again. Hell, I know I'm not going to sleep ever again.
Heading
into the holiday weekend with a cold, like mixing a Ricola, brah. There's nothing I haven't mixed in.
Twitter.
Rome is already.
Oh, doing good. Just dodging bears in the front yard and watching moose attack people on the highway. Like my 6-year-old asked me yesterday when I asked her to help me take out of the trash. So what's in it for me? It's a dinner.
Yo.
500 million. In my book, 500 million is more than 40 million.
That's right.
The Great Eight has made it one.
And you can erase all your thoughts about the same old Caps. Because this Caps crew had chance after chance to show that they were the same old Caps. And they didn't. An amazing
you
job.
You can see Nevada from here.
John Morosi is my guest.
That was the perfect scene setter and tone setter for the Stanley Cup.
Rome wasn't built in a day. And James Kelly's forehead was not painted in a day. Get that poor woman a paint roller.
For selling my own furniture.
That's pretty awkward, wasn't it? Clearly my man did not get to the Molly part of his night. If he was threatening to ice the driver.
Ice.
Can't stop. Won't stop moving. Bob Melvin is my guest. He had to place Chris Davis on the DL.
It hurts. I mean, he's like having a human sledgehammer.
Chad Millman.
Good to be with you. This is awesome.
What was your reaction when you heard the news of the Supreme Court's decision?
Oh my God, I can't believe this happened. That was exactly it.
Duck nut.
Stevie in H-Town. I'm 40.
Vance.
You know, the other man.
Oh, dear.
Benton? Really?
Crank it up!
Oh. I'm fine.
Oh, you just get the vote. I'm pretty low maintenance.
Cut that meat.
Totally trashed.
Good night now!
Yeah, 4 amazing days. Great job, Alvin. Huge call today brought to you by Zipa. Snoring is disrespectful. It is offensive. You need to stop. Get a Zipa right now. Make everybody happy. Zipa is 100% guaranteed to work. ZYPPAH.com. Zipa.
My thanks to all of our guests, John Morosi, Bob Melvin, Chad Millman. I'm not in tomorrow. I've got something better than me for you. Something better for me. I know you like to crack on the guest hosts. It's not an easy gig. Somebody better than me. In fact, two people that are better than me. The freaking Sklars, the brothers Sklar, are in tomorrow to host the show. I am pumped for them. So glad they said yes. Make sure you check out the Sklars. They will be awesome. They're going to host. Thanks to the XR4TI. Hey, clones, thanks for putting up with me. I'll try and get right over the weekend. I'll come back next week. I'll sound great. I'll be great. See you then. Have a great holiday weekend. I'm out.